Imagine you are walking through like a really dense, quiet forest in the late fall. The air is crisp, the leaves are damp, and everything is just completely still. And then suddenly you hear this massive, echoing, bone-rattling crack.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it sounded like a tree just snapping in half. So you push your way through the thick brush and you see them. Two enormous stags.
Right.
They are head to head, breathing heavily. Steam is literally rising from their coats in the cold air. And their massive branching antlers are completely entangled as they just push against each other with this incredible, terrifying amount of physical force.
It's a crazy thing to witness, honestly.
It really is. And you know, normally when we see a nature documentary showing something like this, our reaction is pretty standard. We just think, oh, nature's brutal. It's just wild animals fighting for dominance.
Yeah, exactly. Just the circle of life, right?
Right. But what if, and just stay with me here, what if you were actually looking at one of the most sophisticated, brilliant, and elegant security technologies ever designed in the history of the universe?
Which sounds completely wild when you first hear it.
It does. But what if those tangled antlers hold the exact key to understanding the future of human warfare, the fundamental architecture of the internet, and like a completely new way to secure global civilization?
I mean, it sounds like an absurdly massive leap, right? To
Yeah.
go from wild stags fighting in a damp forest to, the complexities of global cybersecurity and international geopolitics. But that is exactly the journey we are going on today.
And it is a fascinating journey.
It really is. We're looking at how the brutal, uncompromising laws of thermodynamics and biological evolution have direct, unavoidable implications for how human beings are going to survive in the digital age.
And to take you on this journey, we are diving into what might be one of the most paradigm-shifting, fiercely debated documents we have ever covered on this show.
Oh, absolutely.
We have our hands on a February 2023 thesis from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. It was written by a U.S. Space Force major named Jason P. Lowery.
Which is quite the credential.
Right. And the title alone is one of those things that just makes you stop and reread it twice. It's called Soft War One Word, a novel theory on power projection and the national strategic significance of Bitcoin.
And I'll tell you right now, it is a dense, rigorously researched piece of work.
Yeah, okay.
So what we are doing today in this deep dive is unpacking the core architecture of this thesis. We're going to deconstruct the author's methodology, explore his completely novel framework for analyzing digital networks, and then arrive at some highly actionable, frankly, startling takeaways that stem from all this research.
Because the implications here affect literally everything from national defense strategy down to how you individually secure your own digital property.
Exactly.
Okay, let's unpack this because right out of the gate, this thesis takes everything you think you know about Bitcoin, everything you've heard on financial news networks, and just flips it completely upside down.
It really does. The fundamental disruption of this entire thesis is the argument that almost everyone on the planet today is analyzing Bitcoin using the completely wrong theoretical framework.
Which is a bold claim.
Extremely bold. But think about how we currently talk about it. We look at it entirely through the lens of financial, monetary, or economic theory.
Right. Policymakers call it a cryptocurrency.
Exactly. Regulators treat it as an unregulated peer-to-peer cash system, or maybe an unregistered security. And financial analysts go on television to debate its value based purely on, market dynamics, inflation hedges, supply and demand, all that stuff.
So standard economic metrics.
Right. But the author argues that treating Bitcoin strictly as a monetary technology creates a massive systemic analytical bias.
And a dangerous one, from what I understand.
Very dangerous. Far worse than just being academically incorrect, he argues this bias has actually created a critical national security blind spot for the United States and its allies.
Okay, I want to stop right there and play devil's advocate for a second, because if I'm a traditional economist listening to this, I'm already rolling my eyes.
Oh, sure.
Because the creator of the network, Satoshi Nakamoto, literally titled the white paper Bitcoin, a peer-to-peer electronic cash system. It has the word coin right there in the name.
It does.
It was designed to process transactions. So why on earth shouldn't we hand this over to the economists to figure out?
Well, that is the exact trap of semantics that the thesis warns against. To explain the danger of this blind spot, the author brings up a really illuminating historical analogy.
I love this part.
It's brilliant. We have to go back in time and look at the alchemists of the 9th century. When black powder, gunpowder, was first discovered in China, the alchemists who created it weren't trying to invent a weapon of mass
Yeah,
destruction.
not at
They
all.
were looking for an elixir of immortality. They were trying to invent medicine. In fact, the literal translation of the Chinese word for gunpowder, huayao, means fire medicine.
Right, because its creator intended its first use case to be medicinal, so they just named it medicine.
Precisely. So the alchemists of the day, and for quite some time after, looked at this new black powder concoction and evaluated it based on how well it cured ailments.
Which I imagine it did not do very well.
It did terrible.
Mm.
They were shoehorning a completely novel, multidisciplinary chemical technology into a single theoretical framework medicine simply because of the label its creator slapped on it.
That makes so much sense.
They completely missed the underlying physical reality of the technology. They were blind to the fact that it was a highly combustible, explosive material that would, you know, fundamentally alter the trajectory of human warfare and global power dynamics for the next 1,000 years.
Wow.
They let the name dictate their understanding of reality.
Which is such a brilliant way to frame the current debate around digital assets. A Bitcoin is just an arbitrarily derived name for a software abstraction. It's just a string of letters. You could just as easily call it a Bitspoon or a BitToken or a Bitstamp. But because Satoshi Nakamoto called it a coin and intended its first use case to be an electronic cash system, our entire society just immediately handed it over to the economists.
And if you hand a completely novel technology exclusively to economists, people whose expertise is in market efficiencies, fiscal policy, and human behavioral incentives, not in computer theory, system security, thermodynamics, or military strategy, you are setting yourself up for a catastrophic strategic failure.
Because they just don't have the tools to see it for what it really is.
Right. If you force something new into an old box, you only see the parts of the new thing that happen to fit into the old box.
So if we can't use our modern economic frameworks, what's our baseline here? How does this author suggest we look at this?
Instead of economics, the author builds a completely novel framework that he calls power projection theory.
Okay.
Through this lens, he argues that Bitcoin is not digital money. It is actually a military-grade electro-cybersecurity technology.
Which sounds like something out of a sci-fi movie.
It really does. He argues it is a new form of non-kinetic warfare that he calls soft war. He is suggesting that we are witnessing the emergence of a new power projection tactic for the digital age.
And what does that actually mean for us?
It means sovereign nations and individuals can secure their most precious resources in cyberspace by imposing severe physical costs on attackers, but without dropping a single bomb or firing a single bullet.
Okay, to really grasp that, I think we need to talk about why militaries exist in the first place. Because most people just think of the military as, you know, the people who go fight bad guys when diplomacy fails.
That's the common perception.
But their foundational purpose at a strategic level is much more specific than that, isn't it?
It is. Sovereign nations have a fiduciary responsibility to their citizens to protect and defend access to international thoroughfares.
Like the oceans?
Exactly. Think about the domains of land, sea, air, and more recently, space. Militaries exist explicitly to preserve a nation's freedom of action and its ability to securely exchange goods and communicate across these thoroughfares.
So if someone tries to block that...
Right. If a hostile nation tries to intentionally degrade your ability to move cargo ships across the ocean or fly commercial planes through international airspace, that is an act of war.
Right.
And militaries ensure that access remains open by having the capacity to impose severe physical cost destruction, basically on anyone who tries to deny it.
And now, as a civilization, we have migrated into a brand new thoroughfare, cyberspace.
The newest and arguably the most important one.
It is unquestionably the most vital, economically critical international thoroughfare of the 21st century. We are constantly exchanging our most precious modern resource bits of information across this domain every single millisecond.
Everything is there.
Yeah, our financial records, our intellectual property, our communications, our power grid controls, everything is in cyberspace. But here is the massive problem. How do you secure it? How do you project physical power in a domain that has absolutely no physical mass?
That is the defining security puzzle of our time. And to solve it, the author realized he couldn't start with a preconceived framework. He couldn't just take existing military doctrine for the Navy or the Air Force and just apply it to a network of silicon chips.
Right, because the physics are totally different.
Exactly. So he used a methodology called grounded theory.
Okay, I want to make sure we don't gloss over that, because how you conduct the research really dictates the outcome. What exactly is grounded theory, and how does it prevent that alchemy trap we just talked about?
Well, in a traditional deductive scientific model, you start top down. You pick an existing theoretical framework, let's say Keynesian economics. You derive a hypothesis within the boundaries of that framework, and then you go out and collect data to see if your hypothesis is true.
You're kind of looking for confirmation.
Yes. But grounded theory is an inductive, bottom-up approach. You purposely do not start with a preconceived framework.
Oh,
instead, you gather a massive amount of qualitative data from widely diverse, seemingly unrelated fields. You code the recurring concepts, and you allow a completely new theory to organically emerge from the data itself.
So the author wasn't just reading white papers written by crypto developers.
Not at all.
He looked at biology, evolutionary psychology, anthropology, political science, computer science, thermodynamics, and modern military strategic theory.
He cast a massive net.
He just threw all of these into a blender to find the common thread tying them all together.
Yes. He stripped away the semantics and looked for the fundamental mechanisms of survival and security across all domains of life. And the common thread he found, the bedrock upon which all complex systems survive, is what he calls power projection.
Okay, but let me push back on this a little bit, because it still feels like a massive leap. Cyberspace is a completely virtual domain. It's made of code.
Yeah.
It's abstract logic. If we are trying to understand how to secure an abstract domain, why would we look at biology or physical warfare? Aren't we just doing the exact same thing the economists did, but in reverse? Aren't we basically judging a fish by its ability to climb a tree by trying to apply physical world rules to a digital space?
It's a great question, and it's the natural skepticism anyone would have. But what's fascinating here is that to understand why cyberspace is currently so incredibly insecure, the author argues we have to rewind the clock billions of years.
Okay, how far back?
All the way. We have to strip away all of our modern, civilized human comforts, our laws, our police forces, our digital encryption, and we have to look at the raw, unforgiving physical security of wild animals.
The law of the jungle.
Exactly. We have to look at how life itself has managed to survive in a universe that is strictly governed by the laws of thermodynamics and the presence of predators.
Which brings us to this concept of primordial economics. Because if you think about it, before there were markets, before there was money, there was still economics. It was just an economics of calories and survival.
Precisely. Earth, in its natural state, is a deeply hostile, hyper-competitive environment. The military uses an acronym for this, a CCCH environment. It stands for congested, contested, competitive, and hostile.
It's a neighborhood where literally every single neighbor you have is potentially a murderer, a fratricide, or a cannibal.
Yeah, it's brutal.
If you make a single mistake, you're someone else's lunch. It's an environment with zero inherent trust.
In a zero-trust environment like that, survival boils down to a very cold mathematical reality. The author introduces a crucial formula here called the benefit-to-cost ratio of attack, or the BCRA.
The BCRA, okay.
In the wild, predators are essentially performing primordial economic calculations every minute of the day. They're evaluating the benefit of an attack versus the cost of an attack.
So let's break that down for the listener. If you are a hungry wolf roaming the forest and you spot a sick, limping rabbit, the calculation is pretty easy, right?
Oh, very easy.
The benefit is high. It's a meal full of calories that will keep you alive.
Mm.
And the cost of attack is incredibly low because that sick rabbit cannot fight back and it cannot run away fast enough to exhaust your energy reserves.
Right.
So the BCRA is sky high, so the wolf attacks without hesitation.
Conversely, if that same hungry wolf wanders into a clearing and sees a massive, fully grown, healthy grizzly bear eating a carcass, the calculation changes entirely.
Yeah, I would hope so.
The potential benefit is still there. Maybe the wolf wants to steal a carcass or even eat the bear. But the cost of attack is astronomically high. That bear has the physical capacity to impose severe, lethal physical costs on the wolf.
It's going to destroy the wolf.
Exactly. The wolf knows that engaging the bear will likely result in its own death. So the BCRA is incredibly low. The wolf makes the rational, primordial economic choice to just walk away.
This means the overarching goal of every single living organism on planet Earth is to constantly keep their personal BCRA as low as possible. You want to make it physically prohibitive for anyone to even try to attack you. You want to be the bear, not the rabbit.
Exactly. But that creates a massive biological budgeting problem, which the thesis calls the survivor's dilemma.
Right.
The survivor's dilemma is the tension at the core of all evolutionary biology. Every organism has a strictly limited amount of energy. You only have a finite budget of watts or calories that you can expend in a given day.
You can't do everything.
No, you can't. The dilemma is how you allocate those watts. Do you put your energy into growing your resource abundance, which increases the benefit of attacking you? Or do you put your energy into growing your physical defenses, which increases the cost of attacking you?
Okay, let's use an analogy here to make this really vivid. Think of your biological survival as if you were driving a car using two-pedal driving, and you are constantly being chased by a massive invisible bear.
A terrifying image.
Right. You can't see the bear in your rearview mirror, but you know it's always back there, and it represents the hazardous, lethal BCRA level of your environment. If the bear catches you, you die.
Walk us through how the pedals work in this scenario.
Okay, so your throttle pedal, the gas, represents your cost of attack. The harder you press the gas pedal, the more of your daily energy budget you are spending on growing sharp claws, thick scales, denser bones, or massive muscles.
Making yourself dangerous.
Right. This makes you incredibly dangerous to attack. Pressing the gas pedal accelerates your car away from the invisible bear. It drops your BCRA. But the brake pedal represents your benefit of attack.
Okay.
When you press the brake, you are spending your energy getting fatter, reproducing, gathering a larger hoard of food, basically becoming more prosperous.
Which is the goal of life.
It is, but getting fatter and gathering more resources makes you a much more appetizing, valuable target to predators. It physically slows your car down, allowing the invisible bear to catch up to you.
Mm. And the brutal reality of the dilemma is that you have to press both pedals to survive. You need resources to live. You have to eat. You have to gather. You have to reproduce.
You can't just be claws and teeth.
Right. But if you only press the brake pedal, if you only focus on gathering resources and becoming prosperous, but you completely neglect investing energy into your physical defenses, your BCRA skyrockets. You become a massive, juicy, slow-moving target with absolutely no defenses. You will be devoured by the environment.
So it's this constant, agonizing tightrope walk. You have to keep a heavy, heavy foot on the gas pedal, the physical defense, the cost of attack, just to outrun the invisible predators, while simultaneously feathering the brake pedal just enough to gather the resources you need to not starve to death.
Which leads to what the author calls the concept of the infinitely prosperous organism.
Ooh, I like that phrase.
The thesis mathematically demonstrates that if you want to achieve infinite prosperity, meaning if you want to grow your resources and your wealth endlessly without being eaten by your neighbors, there is only one way to do it. You have to continuously increase your cost of attack.
There's no shortcut.
None. You have to be able to increase your capacity to project physical power faster than your resource abundance grows.
Mm.
You must possess an infinite, scalable capacity to impose physical costs on attackers.
Which perfectly explains something that always seems a bit contradictory when you watch, like, nature documentaries. Nature's top survivors, the absolute apex predators of the world, are not energy efficient.
Yeah, they're terrible at it.
A silverback gorilla, a great white shark, a lion, they are incredibly wasteful from a strict caloric standpoint. They burn massive amounts of energy just maintaining the muscle mass, the bone density, and the weaponry needed to keep their BCRA low.
Right.
If they were highly efficient, they'd be entirely pacifistic, but they'd also be extinct.
It is a profound realization about the architecture of natural systems. Nature has an incontrovertible, hardwired bias toward its strongest, most intelligent physical power projectors. The organisms that master the capacity to project physical power are the ones that survive, dictate the pecking order, and control the resources.
But wait, if projecting maximum physical power, you know, sharp claws, lethal fangs, venom is so critical to survival and resource control. This brings us back to what I think is the most surprising, totally mind-blowing concept in the entire text.
Yes.
Let's talk about antlers.
The anomaly of the herbivores.
Right. If you are a deer or a stag or an elk, why on earth do you grow these massive, heavy, incredibly bizarre, energy-inefficient geometric structures out of your skull every single year?
It seems like a massive waste.
It does. If your goal is to physically defend yourself against wolves and mountain lions to keep your BCRA low, why not just grow a single razor-sharp rhino horn on your nose?
Much more efficient.
A single spike would take way less energy to grow, and it would be vastly more efficient at stabbing a predator to death. From a pure engineering standpoint, antlers look like a terrible design flaw.
That is the exact question that exposes the brilliance of biological design. To understand antlers, you have to look at the social dynamics of the animals that wear them.
Okay.
Carnivores, like a pack of wolves, use their razor-sharp teeth and claws to hunt down prey. But they also have a massive problem. They are a social species, and they have to establish a dominance hierarchy within their own pack.
Someone has to be the boss.
Exactly. They need to figure out who is the alpha, who gets to eat first, and who gets to mate. And historically, the only way to settle a dispute in a zero-trust environment is physical power.
Right. But if you settle a disagreement with your brother over who gets the last piece of meat, and you settle it using razor-sharp lethal fangs...
Someone is going to die.
Yeah, someone is going to get their throat ripped out.
Exactly. Intraspecies physical conflict among apex carnivores is highly dangerous. They can easily, and often do, mortally wound each other just trying to establish the pecking order. But herbivores, like stags, don't hunt for food. They eat grass. So they have what the author calls evolutionary trade space.
What does that mean?
It means they don't need lethal weapons to acquire calories. However, they still need to establish a dominance hierarchy. They still need a physical, power-based resource control protocol to determine who leads the herd and who breeds.
Right. The strongest still needs to lead.
Exactly. They need to project physical power to prove who is the strongest, because they still live in a zero-trust environment. But they desperately need to do it without killing each other.
And that is where the awkward, bizarre geometry of antlers comes in. They're literally designed to be awkward. When two stags fight for dominance, they run at each other with massive kinetic force. But instead of stabbing each other with a sharp single horn, those branching, complex antlers crash together and they entangle.
The entanglement is not a bug. It is the core feature of the technology. It acts as a physical cushion. It creates a safe standoff distance between the fragile skulls and bodies of the two animals.
Think about the absolute brilliance of this compromise. Nature found a way to let these animals fight for dominance using real maximum physical power. They are pushing against each other with all their might, burning massive amounts of watts, physically proving beyond a shadow of a doubt who is the strongest, most capable protector of the herd.
Yep.
But they are doing it without destroying their own society. It is a localized, highly intensive, but completely non-lethal war.
It allows for intraspecies physical power competition while minimizing fatal intraspecies injury. It solves the problem of internal conflict. But crucially, it does not leave them defenseless against external threats.
Oh, right.
If a wolf and interspecies predator attacks the stag can still use those antlers to impose severe blunt force physical trauma on the wolf. The antlers are highly effective lethal weapons against predators, but they are safe, non-lethal sparring tools for other stags.
It's an evolutionary masterpiece. Antlers are a biological technology for mutually assured preservation. They let the herd figure out who the strongest members are without the strongest members bleeding each other out in the process.
And that biological concept, the deep existential need for a non-lethal physical power projection technology to securely settle disputes and manage resources, is the bridge that takes us out of the forest and directly into the architecture of human civilization.
Because if wild animals use physical power like antlers or claws or sheer muscle mass to settle disputes fairly and establish their pecking order, what do humans do? We like to think we are above all that, right?
We certainly try to outsmart nature. At some point in our evolutionary history, we developed a massive neocortex. We became behaviorally modern Homo sapiens. And our big grand idea for survival was to try and completely stop using physical power to settle our internal disputes.
We looked at the stags burning thousands of calories locking antlers, and we looked at the wolves bleeding out from pack fights, and our big human brains just said, that is incredibly inefficient. It's too much work, too much energy, and way too much risk of injury. Let's just use our imaginations instead.
Precisely. We invented abstract power. We created belief systems. Instead of the biggest, strongest, most physically capable person ruling the tribe by sheer physical force, we invented abstract concepts. We invented the idea of a king or a chief or a CEO. We wrote down rules of law on pieces of parchment and agreed to follow them.
We applied symbolic... We didn't have to fight physically over every single apple or piece of land.
Yes, but the thesis points out a fatal, inescapable flaw in this grand human experiment of civilization. Abstract power hierarchies are systemically fundamentally insecure.
Why? I mean, I hear what the thesis is saying about physical power, but come on. We live in a highly civilized society. We rely on laws, we rely on courts, we rely on judges, not literal physical force, to solve 99% of our problems today. Isn't this thesis being a bit overly pessimistic, maybe even a little Hobbesian about human nature?
It sounds pessimistic until you look at the mechanics of why those courts and laws actually work.
Yeah.
The author argues that abstract power isn't real. It only exists in the collective imagination of the participants. A king only has power if the people believe he has power.
Right.
A law written on parchment only works if people respect the parchment. But a belief system cannot physically constrain a bad actor who refuses to believe the story. If a neighboring tribe decides to invade your land, the king cannot stop them by standing on a hill and shouting his royal title.
That's true.
A judge cannot stop an invading army by waving a piece of paper with a court order written on it.
Because a piece of paper cannot displace mass. A spoken title cannot impose a physical cost on an incoming arrow or a bullet.
Therefore, the king, the wielder of abstract power, relies entirely on knights, the wielders of physical power, to legitimize and protect his rule. The police force, the military, the people with the physical capacity for violence, are what actually enforce the abstract laws. The abstract power structure is completely 100% subordinate to the physical power structure.
Okay, this takes us into a really deep psychological rabbit hole in the text. The author asks a fascinating metacognitive question. If we are trapped behind these massive neocortexes, living inside our own heads, surrounded by symbols and language and abstract ideas, how do we actually biologically know what is objectively real versus what is just a subjective abstract belief?
This is a crucial philosophical point that anchors the whole theory. We live in a world overflowing with symbols, stories, and simulations. To verify objective reality, the human brain relies on a built-in proof-of-power protocol.
The pinching protocol. I love this part of the thesis.
Think about it. When you are having a vivid dream and you start to suspect that the environment around you isn't real, what is the universal human instinct? What do?
You pinch yourself.
Exactly. Why do you pinch yourself? Because you are applying physical power. You're using energy to displace mass over time and space to generate a physical, undeniable sensory input.
To prove you're awake.
You are creating a real-world physical cost. Physical power is the brain's ultimate North Star for objective reality. Mm-hmm. If you can generate proof of physical power, you know you're interacting with the real baseline physical universe, not an abstract illusion or a dream.
So we need physical power not just to defend ourselves from predators, but to literally ground our psychology in reality. We need it to verify truth.
Right.
But let's take this back to the societal level, because we constantly try to replace physical power with abstract power, like kings or governments or fiat currencies, what inevitably happens to human societies.
History shows a repeating cyclical pattern of failure. We establish an abstract power hierarchy to save energy and avoid the brutal physical conflicts of the wild. But because this hierarchy relies entirely on trust, it is systemically vulnerable to exploitation.
Right, because humans are humans.
Exactly. Eventually, the rulers at the top of the hierarchy realize they can alter the rules to benefit themselves without expending any physical energy. They become corrupt. They start abusing the belief system for their own gain. They inflate the currency. They write laws that exempt themselves. They expropriate the wealth of the population.
And because abstract power has no physical constraints, because the king can just declare a new law out of thin air, the oppressed population finds themselves trapped in a simulation where the rules are rigged against them, and they only have one way out.
They have to revert to the base layer of reality. They have to revert to physical power. They have to stop believing the story, pick up pitchforks or rifles, and physically countervail the physical power of the ruler's knights. They have to fight a revolution or a civil war.
Wait, if that is true, then what the text is essentially saying is that warfare, as horrific, bloody, and destructive as it is actually an emergent social benefit. That war is the only mechanism that physically decentralizes abstract power when it becomes too corrupt.
That is the incredibly uncomfortable truth the thesis presents. War is not a glitch in human civilization. It is the reset button. It is the ultimate unavoidable physical constraint on the infinite expansion of abstract power.
Wow.
When a ruler's abstract control over resources becomes too oppressive, the population uses physical power to shatter that control and decentralize the resources back to the people. You can look at the French Revolution, the American Revolution, the fall of Rome. Every time the abstract hierarchy becomes too detached from the physical reality of the population, it ends in physical violence to reset the ledger.
So under this framework, pacifism, the idea that we should just lay down all our weapons and agree to never fight again, is actually incredibly dangerous.
According to primordial economics, pure pacifism is a death sentence. Pacifism artificially decreases a nation's cost of attack.
You're taking your foot off the gas.
Exactly. If you declare that you will never project physical power, your BCRA skyrockets. You become the Sith rabbit. You become an incredibly attractive target, inviting either foreign invasion from an adversary who doesn't share your pacifist beliefs, or you invite massive internal corruption and exploitation from your own leaders because they know you won't physically resist them. You are pressing only the brake pedal, completely taking your foot off the gas while the invisible bear is breathing down your neck.
But here's the massive roadblock we have hit as a species. We can't just keep having kinetic wars every time the abstract systems get corrupt. We've hit a wall in our technological evolution.
Yes. We have reached the kinetic power projection paradox.
Mutually assured destruction.
MAD. For thousands of years, humans innovated kinetic weapons. We went from clubs to swords to gunpowder to artillery to airplanes, constantly trying to increase our capacity for physical power projection. But in the 20th century, we effectively beat the game of physics. We optimized kinetic power projection to its absolute theoretical limit with the invention of strategic nuclear weapons.
They are too efficient.
Exactly. Nuclear warheads are so efficient at projecting physical power, they display so much mass with so little initial effort, that they are paradoxically too destructive to actually use for resource disputes. If we use them to settle a disagreement over territory or resources with a peer nation, we utterly destroy the very environment, the very resources we are trying to secure.
This is where the implications get genuinely terrifying. Let me make sure I'm following this logic. If we cannot use kinetic war to reset the system without destroying the planet, but we fundamentally need physical power to stop exploitative rulers and secure our resources from corruption, are we just trapped?
Yes.
Are we living in a bounded prosperity trap where we just have to accept constantly increasing corruption, surveillance, and exploitation because the physical cost of a revolution is literally nuclear annihilation?
That is the exact national strategic security dilemma we face today. We are stalemated at the physical layer. We are trapped under abstract hierarchies that are becoming increasingly exploitative. And we have no safe, non-lethal way to physically push back. And this is exactly why the author concludes this section with a profound realization. Humans desperately need our own version of antlers.
Human antlers. We need a technology that allows us to lock horns without bleeding out.
We need a way to project physical power, to impose severe, physically prohibitive costs on our attackers, to settle our disputes and decentralize control over resources. But we need a way to do it without kinetic bloodshed. We need a non-lethal physical power projection technology.
And that search for human antlers, the search for a non-lethal way to project physical power, leads us out of the physical world and directly into the digital world. This is where we step into cyberspace, and where the thesis starts to pull all these biological and historical threads together.
Cyberspace is the newest international thoroughfare. But what's fascinating is that the exact same primordial power struggles the survivor's dilemma. The BCRA calculations are playing out online right now. But they are playing out with a terrifying new class of rulers.
Because what is software, really? We tend to think of it as engineering, as hard science, as immutable physics. But the thesis makes the argument that software is actually just another abstract belief system.
Mm.
A computer is just a piece of rock that we have tricked into thinking with electricity.
Right.
It is a machine that is commanded to live-action roleplay to LARP, based entirely on the imagination of the programmer who wrote the code.
That's right. As the famous movie quote goes, there is no spoon. All software objects a digital coin in a video game, a file in a cloud, a user profile on a social media site, they do not physically exist.
They're just illusions.
Exactly. They have no mass. They're abstract symbols. A computer screen is just an abstract reality machine, generating illusions based on logical rules written by humans.
So if software is just an abstract belief system and it has no grounding in physical reality, then the people who write the code and administer the networks are what?
They are God Kings 2.0. Software administrators use abstract power, the ability to write code, to build rank-based hierarchies. Think about the architecture of the major tech platforms or financial networks we use today. The administrators grant themselves what the author calls zero-sum administrative privileges.
Which is basically digital royalty.
Yes. This is just a modernized form of royal rank. It gives them unimpeachable, centralized control over the population's most precious 21st century resource bits of information. Our financial records, our private communications, our behavioral data, our digital property.
And they can do whatever they want with it. We've seen this happen constantly. They deplatform people, they freeze bank accounts, they alter algorithms to hide certain speech, they harvest user data and sell it to the highest bidder.
Oh, all the time.
And just like the feudal peasants of the Middle Ages, we, the digital peasants, just have to trust that they won't abuse that power. We have to sign a terms of service agreement and just hope the God Kings are benevolent.
And 5,000 years of recorded history tells us exactly how relying on the benevolence of unchecked abstract power ends. Abstract power hierarchies always become exploitative. The software God Kings are currently A/B testing massive populations, manipulating behavior, and expropriating digital wealth because there is absolutely no physical constraint stopping them from doing so.
Why isn't there a physical constraint? If I want to rob a bank in the real world, I have to physically break through a steel vault, which requires an immense amount of energy and risk. Why is cyberspace so different?
Because fundamentally, cyberspace is currently missing a protocol. It was built without a proof of power protocol.
You cannot pinch the internet.
Exactly. You cannot pinch or poke cyberspace to verify what is real. And more importantly, you cannot project physical power in cyberspace to impose a severe physical cost on a bad actor. Think about a cyber attack. Launching a million spam emails or initiating a Sybil attack where a hacker creates thousands of fake IP addresses to overwhelm a network with false requests costs the attacker practically zero physical energy.
It's just a few keystrokes.
They just write a script and hit run.
So the cost of attack in cyberspace is virtually zero.
Which means the benefit-to-cost ratio of attack, the BCRA, is astronomically high. Bad actors can exploit the system infinitely. Whether it's state-sponsored hackers launching massive denial-of-service attack to take down a power grid, or tech monopolies endlessly harvesting your behavioral data, they do it because it costs them no physical watts to execute.
And totally defenseless.
Users are completely defenseless. They have no physical power to fight back. They are the sick rabbits of the digital jungle.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because this is the massive, earth-shattering aha moment of the entire thesis. This is where Lowry flips the script on what Satoshi Nakamoto actually invented. Bitcoin is not just a digital coin.
No. According to power projection theory, Bitcoin is the missing physical cost function protocol for the internet.
Okay, stop right there and explain exactly how that works. How does a piece of software fix the pinching problem? How does it project physical power?
It relies on an earlier computer science concept called hash cash, which was invented by a cryptographer named Atom back in the 90s.
Yeah.
Bitcoin effectively turns the global electric power grid into a massive programmable state mechanism. It demands real-world physical power, huge amounts of raw watts of electricity to solve highly complex cryptographic puzzles in order to write data to the ledger.
This is what we colloquially call proof-of-work mining.
Right. But we need to stop thinking of it as mining for imaginary internet money. Think of it as a thermodynamic conversion process. Bitcoin literally converts real-world physical power watts into machine-readable bits.
That's crazy to think about.
It creates a cryptographic lottery ticket that can only be generated by burning electricity. And it issues a mathematically verifiable receipt for that expended physical energy.
So, to interact with the base layer of the Bitcoin network, to control the ledger or alter a record, you have to prove to the network that you expended a massive amount of physical energy in the real world. You have to prove you pinched the universe.
Yes.
You can't just write a fake script. You have to physically burn the coal or capture the hydropower and run the ASICs.
This changes everything we know about cybersecurity. It imposes severe, infinitely scalable physical costs on any belligerent actor trying to exploit or attack the network. If a hostile government or a massive hacking syndicate wants to alter the Bitcoin ledger to steal funds, censor transactions, or rewrite history, they cannot just rewrite the abstract code like a software god king.
Because the network would reject it.
Exactly. They have to physically outproduce the electrical wattage of the entire global Bitcoin network combined.
Which, at this point, consumes more energy than many sovereign nations. To attack it, you would have to build thousands of power plants and manufacture millions of specialized computers, which is practically impossible to do covertly and astronomically expensive to sustain.
It represents a physically prohibitive cost of attack. Bitcoin solves the survivor's dilemma in cyberspace. It allows users to increase their cost of attack to infinitely high levels, dropping the BCRA to near zero. The network is physically secured by the laws of thermodynamics.
Which is exactly why the author suggests a major terminology change. Calling it Bitcoin anchors us in that economic blind spot we talked about earlier. We need to stop calling it Bitcoin and start calling it BitPower.
BitPower is a vastly more accurate description of the underlying physics. It is bits of information backed by raw, undeniable physical power.
And this leads to a mind-blowing concept for the future of the internet, the Electro Cyberdome. Because if you have this unforgeable receipt of physical energy, you can use it for way more than just financial transactions, right?
Exactly. If you have BitPower, this proof of power receipt, you can use it as a universal cybersecurity tool. The thesis proposes building what the author calls proof of power wall APIs. Imagine you are running a critical server for a hospital or a power grid.
Okay, high stakes infrastructure.
Right. Instead of just relying on abstract logic, passwords, or IP blacklists to keep hackers out, your firewall demands a microscopic proof of power receipt, a tiny fraction of bit power, to allow any incoming control signal through.
So if a hacker tries to launch a massive denial of service attack against my server, flooding it with a million fake requests a second, my server doesn't even bother trying to figure out if the requests are fake. It just says, show me the bit power for each request.
Yes. And because generating that bit power requires burning real-world electricity, the hacker suddenly faces a massive physical electric bill to execute the attack. The computer effectively tells the attacker, you don't have enough physical watts to penetrate this firewall.
It stops them in their tracks.
It physically constrains the attacker. It's like building an invisible, non-kinetic force field in Electro Cyberdome around your digital assets. You are defending your slice of cyberspace using the unyielding laws of thermodynamics.
Now, I have to bring up the massive elephant in the room regarding the crypto industry. What does this power projection theory mean for things like Ethereum? A huge portion of the cryptocurrency world has moved away from proof of work to a system called proof of stake, specifically because they argue proof of work uses too much energy and hurts the environment. Ethereum completely abandoned proof of work. Are they achieving the same security without the energy cost?
If we connect this to the bigger picture of human history and everything we've just discussed about abstract versus physical power, proof of stake is a catastrophic fundamental regression.
Why? They argue it's an elegant software solution to an energy problem.
Because proof of stake is literally just a regression back to an exploitable abstract power hierarchy. In proof of stake, there is no physical cost function. There are no real-world watts being expended. Instead, the network is controlled by the people who hold the most stake, which is simply a digital token that they created out of thin air via code.
It's an imaginary rank. It's the digital equivalent of a king declaring himself ruler because he holds the royal scepter, which he also invented.
Exactly. It creates a simulated universe where a technocratic elite grants themselves zero-sum administrative privileges based on how many abstract tokens they hold. They're the new god kings ruling by abstract fiat.
And there's nothing stopping them.
There are absolutely no physical constraints preventing them from rewriting the rules, censoring users, freezing accounts, or exploiting the system.
Now, they will argue back fiercely against that. They will say, no, the code is the law. We have encoded logical rules like slashing penalties, or if a validator acts maliciously, the software automatically destroys their stake. The logic keeps everyone honest.
And as the thesis rigorously points out, relying on the people with the most abstract power to write the logical rules that supposedly constrain their own abstract power is a historical fool's errand.
Right, because they can just rewrite it.
We have 5,000 years of written history proving that logical constraints, whether they're written on parchment in a constitution or written in Python in a smart contract, cannot stop systemic exploitation. When the people in power want to change the rules, they just change the rule.
The king always finds a loophole.
Only physical power can impose an undeniable constraint. By abandoning proof of work, proof of stake networks have abandoned the only mechanism capable of physically securing a digital system against tyranny. They have voluntarily removed the human answers. They have built a beautiful, highly envisioned castle out of sand.
Okay, let's synthesize all of this. We've gone from stags to kings to cyberspace. What is the ultimate bottom line impact of Bitcoin in this theoretical framework?
The ultimate impact is that Bitcoin is soft war.
Soft war, a completely new domain of conflict.
It is a non-lethal physical power projection technology. It allows populations and sovereign nations to fight for zero trust, egalitarian, decentralized control over the most precious resources in the digital age. And it allows them to do this using massive astronomical amounts of physical energy watts to prove their commitment, secure the network, and physically constrain bad actors.
But no one gets hurt.
Exactly. They do it without hurting anyone.
It is the digital equivalent of antlers.
Yes. It replaces mutually assured destruction with mutually assured preservation. It is a massive global physical power competition, a very real thermodynamic war. But it is played out in electrical grids and silicon chips, not on battlefields with human lives and kinetic explosives. It allows us to physically decentralize power and secure our freedom in cyberspace without firing a single bullet.
That is just, it's a staggering shift in perspective. If you accept this thesis, it means we are currently watching a massive global non-lethal war for the future of human freedom unfold right in front of us, and the mainstream media is treating it like it's just a volatile tech stock on Robinhood.
Which brings us to the final and most critical part of our discussion today. Because if Bitcoin is actually a military-grade electro-cybersecurity system, a completely new domain of strategic power projection, how should nations and individuals react right now? What are the actionable takeaways from Major Lowry's research?
We promised you actionable advice at the beginning of this deep dive, and here it is. Takeaway number one, we must immediately shift the analytical lens.
We must stop relying exclusively on economists, central bankers, and financial analysts to dictate public policy regarding Bitcoin. Understanding this technology requires understanding computer science, thermodynamic theory, military strategy, and power projection.
We need different experts in the room.
Right. If policymakers in the U.S. or Europe continue to treat this strictly as a digital casino token to be regulated by the SEC, they are perpetuating a massive national security blind spot that our adversaries are already starting to exploit.
Takeaway number two, recognize the severe systemic threat of proof of stake.
Policymakers, and you as a user of digital networks, must realize that proof of stake is not a viable green replacement for proof of work. It is an exploitable system of cyber tyranny disguised as environmentalism. It replaces physical security with a trust-based oligarchy.
Because it takes away the antlers.
Exactly. Banning proof-of-work mining because of energy consumption concerns is identical to banning a nation's physical military defenses, because running tanks and jets requires too much fuel that leaves you completely physically defenseless in a hostile environment.
And speaking of defense, here is some highly actionable and frankly provocative advice for policymakers and citizens alike. The Second Amendment argument.
This is a fascinating legal and philosophical point raised in the thesis, and it has profound implications for U.S. law. The Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution protects the inherent right of citizens to bear arms. Why? To physically secure their property, their lives, and to serve as a decentralized physical constraint against a tyrannical state.
Right. It's the ultimate decentralization of physical power.
If you follow the logic of power projection theory, and you accept that Bitcoin is fundamentally a non-lethal electric armament, a physical power projection technology used to physically secure property and data in cyberspace, then trying to ban Bitcoin or trying to ban proof-of-work mining could be interpreted as a direct violation of the Second Amendment.
That is wild.
Citizens have a fundamental constitutional right to project physical power to secure themselves, whether that is with a kinetic rifle in the physical world or an electric hashing rig in the digital world.
That is an argument that is going to cause some serious friction in Washington. The idea that a Bitcoin ASIC miner is legally equivalent to a firearm for the purposes of self-defense. And the author doesn't stop there. He talks about national strategy, stockpiling, and the concept of hash forces.
Yes. He points out that smaller, more agile nations like El Salvador have already realized this new reality. They are using volcanic geothermal energy to mine Bitcoin. From an economic perspective, they are making money. But from a strategic perspective, they're effectively building their own hash forces.
Like a cyber militia.
They are building a digital militia to secure their sovereign ability to transact and communicate globally without needing permission from the legacy financial system or foreign superpowers.
They are projecting physical power in cyberspace to guarantee their independence.
The author strongly advises that the United States government needs to recognize this new strategic reality immediately before it's too late. The U.S. should be stockpiling BitPower, acquiring Bitcoin as a strategic national reserve asset, just like we stockpile oil or gold. Furthermore, the U.S. needs to aggressively foster a robust domestic hashing industry. We need massive mining operations on U.S. soil.
Because in this new paradigm, mining facilities are not just data centers. They are the new military bases of the cyber domain.
Exactly. They are the thermodynamic engines of national defense in the 21st century. The author even goes so far as to propose a massive reorganization of U.S. cyber defense. He suggests the creation of a U.S. combatant command, perhaps housed under the U.S. Space Force or Cyber Command, dedicated strictly to protecting, defending, and expanding the nation's allied hashing infrastructure.
To protect the grids.
The military needs to protect the power grids and silicon fabrication plants that make this power projection possible.
Because if we don't do it, another nation will. If this is truly the new digital arms race, The absolute worst thing a superpower can do is refuse to run because they don't understand the track or because they are too attached to the old game.
Speed of adoption is everything in the history of warfare. History shows time and time again that empires fall when they expect the next war to look exactly like the last one, and they fail to adopt the new power projection technology before their adversaries do.
Wow. Okay, let's synthesize this incredible journey we've been on today. We started all the way back in the primordial soup, looking at how the very first living organisms had to constantly balance the need to gather resources against the absolute necessity of building physical defenses. We watched stags crash their antlers together in the freezing forest, proving that nature is capable of finding a brilliant, elegant way to settle disputes using maximum physical power, but with minimum lethal injury.
From there, we traced the systemic failures of human history. We saw how we tried to outsmart nature by replacing physical truth with abstract belief systems, kings, laws, and fiat money, only to watch those systems inevitably decay into corruption and exploitation, eventually requiring horrific, bloody kinetic wars to reset the balance of power.
We saw how that exact same flawed human experiment is happening right now in cyberspace, where software god kings rule over our data and our digital lives with absolute unconstrained abstract power, leaving us completely vulnerable to digital tyranny.
And finally, we arrived at the profound discovery of bit power, the realization that Bitcoin is not just digital money, but the invention of a physical cost function for the internet. It is humanity's long-awaited non-lethal digital antlers. It is a way to project physical power, impose severe physical costs on attackers, and mutually assure our preservation in the digital age.
It is a staggering, completely fundamental shift in perspective. Once you see it, you really can't unsee it.
It is, and leaves us with a final, slightly haunting thought to mull over. As we've discussed, history shows us that whenever a new power projection technology emerges, whether it is gunpowder in the 9th century, airplanes in the 20th century, or nuclear fission, those who expect the next war to look like the last war are the ones who fall. If Bitcoin truly is soft war, ask yourself what happens to the massive incumbent empires of today if a silent electric war is already being fought right now, and their leaders still firmly believe it's just a digital casino.
What happens when the invisible bear finally catches up to the car and you realize you spent all your energy gathering resources and you never even bothered to build an engine? Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We know your time is valuable, and we hope this exploration challenges you to keep looking beneath the surface of the narratives we are fed. The next time you hear a talking head debating the price of Bitcoin, or the next time you walk through the woods and hear the crack of antlers in the distance, remember, you might just be looking at the future architecture of global security.